72. Lydia. Their boots crunched in the deepening snow as they walked down the narrow trail. The towering Liratora Mountains no longer what captured her attention, but rather the towering wall that loomed to her left. Killian had told her that it ran north and south to protect the only pass between Mutamora and Darren. The rows of jagged mountains did the rest. At least 50 feet high, the wall was made of gray blocks of stone, the seams tight and smooth enough that she doubted even Tariana could have scaled them without rope. The top held fortified guard posts every 100 feet or so, though the lack of motion or brazier smoke suggested that no one, friend or foe, kept watch. A suspicion that was confirmed as they reached the blackened fortress near the center of the pass. The half-moon exterior wall of the fortress stood whole, but the gate leading into it was gone, the stone stained with soot from where it must have once stood. And running through it was a wide river of blight. Crouching behind dead brush, Killian stared at that gap, his jaw taut. Remembering, she thought. Remembering the last time he'd been here. When the wall had fallen and Rufina had invaded, remembering his defeat.
You see any sign of life?
He asked softly, finally breaking the silence. Lydia shook her head, having already used her mark to scan the surrounding territory. There was nothing alive. Even the forest around them was dead, leagues and leagues of barren trees as far as the eye could see. But there could be someone beyond the wall or in the fortress, and I wouldn't be able to tell. Should we wait for darkness before we go in?
No.
Killian climbed to his feet.
Darkness is Darren's advantage, not ours. We'll go in now.
Drawing his weapon, he motioned for her to follow, his gaze sweeping their surroundings as they crossed the clear cut between forest and the fortress wall. He held up a hand as he reached the opening, and she paused as he eased alongside the black flow, peering into the courtyard before venturing inward. Lydia followed, the stench of blight filling her nose as she searched for any signs of life. But there was nothing but blackened stone, snow, and the endless howl of the wind. Her eyes skipped over the outbuildings, recognizing one as a smithy and another as a large stable, the ceilings of both collapsed. The fortress backed against the wall itself, the opening of the tunnel leading through looking like a gaping mouth, the bottom of the raised portcullis like teeth. And through it, the blight flowed. But Killian went neither through the tunnel nor into the fortress, instead going to the narrow steps that switchbacked their way to the top and taking them two at a time. Setting her pack against the wall, Lydia followed, eyes going east to Mutamora, all grays and whites. The main river of blight broke off into narrower branches that stretched as far as her eyes could see. Reaching the top of the stairs, she took a moment to marvel at the thickness of the wall, wondering how long it had taken to build. And then she went to the far edge to join Killian where he stood, hood back, the frigid wind tossing his hair.
The last time I stood here,
he said,
the Darren army filled this pass, an endless sea of blackness and flame.
But now it was nothing but a carpet of white with a black stripe down the middle. The V-shaped pass sloped upward into Darren, the sides of the mountains that formed it holding nothing but snow, rocks, and a handful of spindly trees, all of them as dead as those on the Mutamorian side. Was this what Darren looked like? She wondered. Barren and lifeless? Are you so sure there is something out there?
Yes,
Killian said.
Look.
She followed his pointed finger, narrowing her eyes against the glare. In the distance rose plumes of smoke. They followed the Black River up the pass, and she shivered with unease at how it seemed to be both still and moving, pushing east and yet moving west back into Darren, like two opposing rivers merged into one. A trail of footprints ran next to it, all of them headed into the mountains. "Do you have a plan?" she asked, noting that Killian still held his sword in his gloved hand, eyes prowling over their surroundings.
"Not yet," he answered. "First, I need to see what we're up against."
Lydia continued to trudge up the pass, her breath growing increasingly labored as they climbed, her pack heavy. The air felt thin, her lungs as though she wasn't getting enough in each breath. Glancing back, she saw that they were now far higher than the wall, Mudamora visible beyond. As they reached the crest of the pass, Killian pulled her low, both of them staring into the valley below. The blight flowed into it, then split, each branch leading to one of eight virulently green mounds that seemed to pulse with life. Yet, rather than being beautiful, there was something deeply unnatural about them, something that reminded her of the way the corrupted glowed with such an excess of life as to be gluttonous and foul, a wrongness. Armed soldiers stood guard nearby, though they looked more bored than watchful.
"The source," Killian muttered. "The corrupted tenders must be nearby."
It was a struggle to look elsewhere, but Lydia shifted her attention to where the smoke rose. A town, and a large one at that. Even from this distance, she could make out countless figures moving between the rough wooden buildings, plumes rising from dozens of chimneys. Other than the road they were on, the only path leading into town came from a narrow ravine on the north side of the valley. As they watched, a laden cart pulled by a donkey appeared, trundling down the slope into town.
"Zenthyr,"
Killian muttered next to her.
"It has to be."
"What do we do now?" Lydia asked. "We can't just walk into town."
"Why not?"
Killian gestured to the path in front of them, the snow trodden by dozens of footprints.
"Let's go."
Terror pulsed through her veins. But next to her, Killian strode with total nonchalance.
"Don't look so worried,"
he muttered as they approached the town.
"You'll give us away."
Though it soon became clear that, worried or not, no one in the town paid them much attention. Rough two-story buildings made out of wood lined the muddy streets, nearly half of them seeming to be taverns or tap houses, though with the scantily dressed men and women leaning out the upper windows calling out invitations to all who passed, Lydia guessed that just as many were brothels. The people themselves had skins of every hue, from as fair as Lydia's own to skin as dark as any Marin, though most wore the same style of clothing, the women in dark woolen dresses, the men in woolen trousers and coats, their cloaks trimmed with fur. The voices that filled the air used different languages and accents, and if not for the fact she knew they stood in the landlocked center of the continent, Lydia would have guessed they were in a trading port frequented by ships of a dozen different nations. Two men rolled out of the front of one of the taverns, fists flying and mouths spewing curses, and Killian tugged her backward as a crowd formed, the watchers cheering the men on as they struggled.
"Let's see if we can find an inn of sorts."
Turning down another street yielded rows of quieter buildings, and Killian led her toward one with a sign with gilded cursive writing that said, "The Feisty Donkey." Pushing open the door revealed a smoky room with several long tables, the benches lining them filled with men and women. A handful glanced up, but then immediately turned back to the platters of food before them. Approaching the bar, Killian said to the man filling cups of ale,
"You have rooms?"
"Aye. It's 6 coppers a night or a silver for the week, paid up front."
Killian dug into his pocket, and Lydia clenched her teeth. worried he'd pull out his usual handful of gold and silver, but when he opened his palm, it held only a few copper coins.
How much for a meal?
Another copper?
The barkeep glanced at Lydia.
Each? Unless your lass there can sing or dance, then she can eat for free in exchange for an hour's entertainment. Our other girl's gotten too big with child.
She sounds like a cat being strangled when she sings and can barely walk 2 paces without tripping over her own cursed feet.
Killian answered.
You'd be paying me to shut her up.
Can she cook?
Nothing you want to eat. You'd lose half your patrons to the latrines from half-cooked meat if you put her in the kitchen.
Both of them laughed. But instead of glaring, Lydia asked, what about if he dances? Leaning her elbow on the counter, she smiled up at Killian, whose face was filling with dismay. If he loses the shirt, I assure you that you'll have not an empty seat in the place. The barkeep looked him up and down.
Can he dance?
Oh, yes. His mother made sure of it.
Then it's the same deal. You can eat on the house in exchange.
He narrowed his eyes, scrutinizing Killian's face.
I'll throw in some ale as well.
Killian's cheeks had turned bright red, and without a word, he counted out the coins and pushed them toward the barkeep.
Let me know if you change your mind,
the man said, then filled 2 cups and passed them over before retrieving a key with a number 8 carved into it.
Second floor. You want water for washing, it's another copper. You want it warm, another copper on that.
That's bloody robbery.
Killian scowled, shoving the rest of his coins into his pocket.
You want cheap? Go next door and bed down with their fleas. Or take off your shirt and start dancing.
Killian gave Lydia a baleful glare, but then he drank deeply from his filthy glass and said,
A bit of dirt never hurt anyone. Let's go, love.
Lydia followed him through the common room toward the narrow stairs, which creaked as they climbed. The hallway upstairs was lit by a single smoking lamp, but it was enough to make out the 8 carved into the door they'd been assigned. Unlocking it, Killian stepped inside and glanced around before nodding at her to follow. As she'd expected, it was small and sparsely furnished, the tiny window devoid of both glass and shutter, leaving a clear view for any in the building across the street. The single bed had a lumpy mattress stuffed with straw, but the blankets were surprisingly clean, as was the floor. Which was good news for Killian, because she fully intended to make him sleep on it. This useless lass is claiming the bed, she said, tossing her pack on the blankets and then sitting down. Killian only laughed, sliding off his own pack.
I'd say you got your revenge already.
She scowled. What is the plan, Killian?
You keep asking me that.
And you keep not answering. Shrugging, he pulled out the chair, twisting it backward, then sitting down to face her, chin resting on his forearms along the back of it.
I prefer to figure things out as I go.
She knew that. Knew that he was reactionary, relying on his instincts and his mark to steer him down the right path. But that didn't work for her. For one, you need an alias. You're too famous, and half the soldiers in this city will have fought against you. That awfulness on your face isn't going to fool anyone if you don't go by something different.
I think it's coming in rather nicely,
he answered, rubbing his scruffy chin.
And I'm curious to see just how long it will grow. Does it make me look wise?
It makes you look, with his dark eyes regarding her like that, all clever retorts abandoned her lips. He was so good-looking, it hurt. No, you don't look even a little bit wise. He sighed.
Fair enough. But I think it only fair to point out that your name is uncommon, and your actions on the battlefield saving my life well-known, so you also need a new name.
He reached over and pushed her fringe up to reveal her tattoo before dropping it again.
Gertrude. No. Gertie.
Absolutely not. You will not call me Gertie.
Killian grinned, and the skin of her chest burned, the heat rising up her neck to her face until her cheeks were an inferno. And knowing that he'd only come up with something worse, she said, "Fine, but that means I get to pick yours." He shrugged.
"Take your pick."
"Think of a name. Think of something awful he'll hate."
"Birdie."
Killian burst out laughing, the rich sound of it filling the room as she struggled not to sink to the floor in embarrassment.
"Gertie and Birdie? You're not very good at this, are you? How about Tom?"
"Fine," she mumbled. "Tom is fine. Who are we?"
"Married, obviously,"
he said.
"That should serve to deflect any unwanted advances from the ladies, especially if you keep glowering like that. As far as what our story is, I think I need to hear what the story is for all these other people before we come up with one of our own."
Rising, Lydia went to the window and looked out, watching the comings and goings of all the people. This place was a little rough around the edges, but it was also decidedly normal. Women with baskets full of laundry or goods walked through the streets. Men gossiped on the corners. Children wielding sticks ran through the puddles, shouting and laughing.
"It's not what I expected."
She jumped, having not heard Killian come up next to her. He rested a hand against the windowsill, leaning out, but his shoulder brushed against hers and she shivered.
"Nor I," she admitted,
not sure precisely what she'd thought they'd encounter.
"I thought all those living in Darren worshipped the Seventh."
"So it is said."
Killian's gaze remained on the people below.
"Darren isn't easily reached. The mountains defend its eastern borders from Mutamora. The deadlands of the south from Anukastra. The twisted seas and swamps make its western coast unassailable, and the north is frozen year-round, so that border is equally secure. In truth, no one knows what goes on within its borders, and yet..."
"There are people here from every nation."
He gave a slow nod, his elbow grazing her upper arm.
"Why are they here?"
she mused, watching a laughing pair of drunks walk arm in arm.
"How are they here?"
"Good questions, but not our priority. We need to learn more about the corrupted tenders who created those mounds, who they are, and more importantly, where they are."
"And if Malahai is with them?"
He gave a slight nod.
"Ideally, we'd destroy those mounds, but getting Malahai out is our priority. They'll pursue, and with their Deimos tracking us overhead, it will take an act of the Six to reach Solania alive. But first, we need to find out where she is."
They made their way back downstairs, finding the common room had filled as the dinner hour approached. Without hesitation, Killian led her to a table, squeezing into a spot between two men. Lydia sat in the narrow gap across from him, the elbows of the women to either side brushing against her. At Killian's raised hand, one of the serving women approached, and he ordered, giving her a coin and a wink that made the woman smile and flush, despite being old enough to be his mother. She returned moments later with two bowls of thick stew and a platter containing slices of still warm bread smeared with golden butter, along with two glasses of ale. Lydia began spooning stew into her mouth, the bowl quickly disappearing, and then she used a slice of bread to mop up the last few drops. Using her sleeve to wipe away the prior user's lip marks, she drank the ale, feeling her body warm a few moments later. The room was loud enough that she couldn't talk to Killian without shouting, so instead she listened to the conversations of the people next to them.
"I'm not staying here any longer,"
the woman sitting next to her said to her companion.
"I'm sick of being hungry and cold and idle." "You just ate,"
the man replied sourly.
"Quit complaining."
"Yes, because Her Majesty deigned to send the vestiges of her army some supplies. But how long until they run out? And how long will she leave us without this time? I want to go home."
With what coin, woman? It's 10 pieces of gold each, Rennes scored across the Lira Taurus.
Lydia blinked at the amount, which was an outrageous sum. But Killian met her gaze and gave a slight shake of his head.
Listen. We could head back into Mutamora and loot, she suggested.
Find some dead lordling's manor and figure out where he buried his gold and his wife's jewels.
The man snorted loudly, then spit on the floor.
Ain't nothing left to loot, and you know it. And the land's thick with blight. Here we might go hungry a day or two, but that's a shade better than drinking foul water and then rising a walking corpse a few hours later.
So those from Darren weren't spared from the blight's effects. Why was she not surprised? Behind her, a gust of cold air blew in as someone opened the door. Then a booming voice said,
"Clear my table, you bastards!"
Seeing Killian's eyes widen slightly, Lydia turned and looked up. And up. Behind her stood a giant, his ruddy head shaved, his colorless eyes unreadable, as he watched those sitting with her and Killian clamber to their feet, moving off to find other seats. She started to rise, but the giant smiled.
"Not you, lass. You can stay."
"I can move," she replied quickly, but he placed a massive hand on her shoulder, holding her in place.
"Keep your hands to yourself."
Killian didn't speak loudly, but a sudden silence fell across the common room. Almost immediately, the barkeep was at the table, his expression panicked.
"They didn't know this was your table."
Then he pushed at Killian's shoulder.
"You'll find another bench if you know what's good for you, lad."
Killian didn't move, but his eyes went back to her shoulder where the giant's hand remained fixed, despite how she squirmed.
"Let her go, and we will gladly do so."
"No."
The giant closed his other hand over her other shoulder.
"She's the prettiest girl in the place, so I want her to sit with me."
Killian rose to his feet, eyes full of anger.
"You're a daft fool," the barkeep hissed. "She's not worth picking a fight with a giant."
"I beg to differ."
"All ready?"
A new voice filled the silence.
"Gods, Baird. Could you at least wait until we've eaten before you start picking fights?"
A figure slipped down on the bench next to Lydia, and she turned her head to see a broad-shouldered young man around Killian's age. He rested his elbows on the table and gave her a grin, his teeth white against golden brown skin, tousled brown hair falling into his hazel eyes. He was exceptionally good-looking and clearly knew it.
"I'm Agrippa,
the ugly giant who needs to sit his ass down."
He cast a pointed glance upward.
"Is Baird. You are?"
Agrippa. A cell name, if she'd ever heard one. And while his darker complexion suggested one of the Empire's provinces had contributed to his blood, the golden hue to it screamed Celandor. Realizing he was staring at her waiting, she said, "Gertrude."
"That's a pretty name,"
the giant said, finally removing his hands from her shoulders and sitting next to her, his knees barely fitting under the table. The bench creaked alarmingly.
"Well met, Gertrude."
Agrippa took a sip from Lydia's cup. Then he looked at Killian.
"The only folks who sit at Baird's table are girls with pretty names and those with coin to gamble. Since you're clearly not the former, you'd best have the latter."
Killian's eyes darkened, but then he shrugged.
"What's your game?"
"Cards. Thank you, love,"
Agrippa said to the woman who'd brought ale as well as bowls of stew. She kissed his cheek, and he handed her a silver coin with a wink.
"And we don't play for copper."
The grin Killian gave was all teeth.
Neither do I.
Perfect,
Agrippa answered, then he began spooning the stew into his mouth, while Baird tossed the utensil he'd been given aside and drank directly from the bowl. Lydia glanced surreptitiously down, her stomach clenching as she caught sight of the familiar hilt. It bore no legion marks, but it was most definitely a gladius. Impossible, her mind kept telling her, except she knew it wasn't. However he'd ended up in Darren, this young man was from the Empire, and she doubted he'd arrived on the Dark Shores via the stem in the baths in Celendriel, which meant there was another path. Part of her wanted to ask him, but that would mean revealing she wasn't from Darren, and she wasn't certain yet if that was a good idea. Pushing aside his bowl, Agrippa extracted a deck of cards, shuffling them expertly. As he did, two women and a man joined, elbows resting on the table, stacks of silver piled in front of them.
"Blow on my cards, Gertrude," Baird said. "I need a bit of luck."
"She can see your hand, you idiot,"
Agrippa muttered.
"You're going to lose all the coin we've earned for this jaunt across the Lyratoras, and we haven't even made the trip yet."
So there was Zenthyr leading here, but potentially not back. That explained why so many languished in this town despite the war being over. Baird sighed, but pushed Lydia to her feet.
"Go sit with your boy, lovely. When he loses all your coin, you can come back."
He grinned, revealing a gap where his two front teeth had once been. The group set to gambling in earnest, coins piling up in the middle of the table, the number of players whittling down as some folded. It wasn't a game Lydia was familiar with, but if it was new to Killian, he mastered it within a hand of play, for soon he and Agrippa were the only remaining players.
"So, you're new to town,"
Agrippa said.
"You one of the fools still coming through the Zenthyr on the hope of making your fortune looting Mudamora, or one of the fools who lingered in Mudamora long enough to realize there is no fortune to be had?"
"The latter."
Killian glanced at his cards, and Lydia refrained from looking at his hand, having already been informed she had too many tells to be a gambler. Given Tariana had told her the same every time her friend fleeced her of whatever trinkets they'd been playing for, Lydia had decided that maybe it was the truth.
"What do you got?"
Agrippa flipped over what was an impressive hand, leaning back in his chair.
"Beat that, Tom."
Killian didn't answer, and Lydia's stomach sank at the thought of losing what would be a sizable portion of their coin to a stupid game. Then he turned over his cards, and Agrippa's smile fell away.
"I think we're done for the night."
Killian reached to scoop up the coins, but viper fast, Agrippa caught hold of his wrist.
"No one's this lucky. He's cheating. Check him for cards."
In a heartbeat, Baird flipped over the table, silver scattering everywhere as he lunged at Killian. Lydia screamed as Killian shoved her out of the way, but then Agrippa had her by the arm, his hands going up her sleeve.
"It's the girl,"
he shouted triumphantly, pulling three cards from her sleeve, all aces in different suits.
"Those are not mine," she shouted. "You put them in there. You're the cheat."
But even as she said the words, she knew no one would believe them, that for whatever reason, the pair had set her and Killian up.
"You think you can cheat me?"
Baird bellowed. Picking up a chair, he flung it against a wall, then tossed another behind the bar, glass smashing.
"There's going to be a reckoning for this boy."
"Not in here, please, Baird," the barkeep pleaded, ducking as a chair flew over his head.
"Do what you want to him, but do it outside."
"Outside!"
the giant roared.
"I'm going to teach this cheating little shit a lesson."
"You are most certainly welcome to try, you lying prick,"
Killian shouted back, Then he caught Lydia's arm, drawing her with him as the common room emptied onto the street. Outside, he let go of her, pulling his sword. But Baird only looked at him and scoffed.
Fight me like a man with your fists.
Killian barked out a laugh, but then seemed to see the glee on the faces of the onlookers and realized the giant was serious.
You want me to engage in a fist fight with a giant?
Baird grinned.
Unless you're too much of a coward.
Killian was far from a small man, but the giant had to be pushing 8 feet tall and was just as thick. And yet Lydia could see he was considering it. Pushing aside the men between them, Lydia caught hold of his arm.
This is madness, she hissed. You're going to get yourself killed. He's half again your size.
I have my own advantages,
he answered. But he wasn't looking at her, his eyes intent on the giant striding up and down the street and inciting the crowd.
And if I don't, they'll run us out of town.
Better that than you dead.
Yes, but better still if I win.
He tried to pull away, but she dug in her nails until he looked down at her and said,
Trust me, and for the love of the gods, don't interfere.
Unbelting his sword, he pushed it into her hands before striding into the open space, muddy slush splashing around his boots. Agrippa also moved to the center of the space, catching hold of both Baird's arm and Killian's.
You all know the rules, aye?
He shouted.
No weapons but fists and feet. They go until one of them begs mercy or until one gets knocked out. But if someone dies...
He paused, grinning wildly at the crowd.
We'll light a pyre and let the gods fight for the bastard's soul.
The crowd roared their approval, and Baird pulled his arm from Agrippa's grip. Then he tore his shirt off and threw the fabric in the mud before wrenching off his boots and tossing them into the crowd.
You too, you little worm,
he shouted at Killian.
I don't trust that you don't have a blade or two hidden.
Killian glowered, but he yanked his hand free from Agrippa and circled back to Lydia. Jerking off his boots, he dropped them at her feet, then shrugged off his coat and pushed it into her hands, shirt following suit. The women and a good number of the men in the crowd shouted catcalls at him, but Killian didn't react. Instead, he leaned down, his breath hot against her ear.
If this does go poorly, it's all on you.
Reaching up, he tangled his hand in her hair.
Find her.
Then he turned away. Lydia's heart throbbed in her chest as Agrippa again took hold of their hands and held them up. Then he shouted,
Begin!
And dived out of the way as the crowd roared. Baird attacked first, his fist flying toward Killian's face with crushing speed. But before Lydia could scream, Killian shifted sideways and the giant's fist struck nothing but air. Caught up in his own momentum, Baird staggered, and Killian landed 2 fast blows to the giant's gut before dancing backward. The crowd roared in dismay, clearly on Baird's side, but Killian didn't seem to hear them as he paced backward, eyes on the giant. Baird lumbered forward, massive fist swinging, but again Killian evaded the blow, catching the giant's ankles and sending him sprawling. Instead of attacking, Killian moved out of range of Baird's grasping hands, watching while the giant rose, ignoring the crowd's boos. Again and again, Baird attacked, but Killian anticipated every blow, using his speed to move out of the way and land blows of his own. Yet he never attacked. He was wearing the giant down, that much was clear. For while Killian was barely breathing hard, Baird was panting, his massive torso dripping sweat.
Quit dancing around and fight like a man,
He bellowed, the crowd screaming their agreement, but Killian only laughed and circled. It carried on that way, the crowd growing angrier as their favorite stumbled and bled and failed to land a single blow. And Lydia gritted her teeth, uncertain why Killian was baiting them rather than finishing the fight. What was he waiting for? Then she got her answer. Baird slowly rose from the mud where he'd landed after Killian's last blow. And then, in a blinding burst of speed that tore a gasp from her throat, he charged. Instead of dodging, Killian stood his ground, allowing the giant to take him over backward and using his feet to send Baird flying over his head. But the giant caught hold of him as he flipped, and instead of rolling away, Killian ended up on top of him, Baird gripping one of his wrists like a vice. Killian's fists flew, breaking the giant's nose and then cracking his cheek. But with lightning speed, Baird caught his other wrist. Rolling, they grappled, but as Killian freed a hand, using it to strike the giant in the kidneys, Baird pulled an arm back and slammed his massive fist into Killian's ribs. Pain washed across his face, an instinct causing Lydia to leap forward, but Agrippa caught her arms, jerking her back.
You getting in the mix will only cause him more trouble, girl.
Both Killian and Baird were bleeding, their bodies covered in livid red marks and their faces swelling, but neither made any move to concede. The crowd was wild with delight and growing in numbers, people lured from all over town by the noise. And Killian wasn't winning. Even without her mark, she could see his movements slowing down, the pain of dozens of injuries written across his face, and panic filled her because if the giant landed the right blow, it would kill him. Fear grew in her guts, stealing her control, and she struggled against Agrippa, using the tricks Killian himself had taught her. But Agrippa stymied her efforts easily enough that she grew certain he'd been trained at Lessendor itself, and he only chuckled, forcing her to her knees in the mud.
He won't kill him, lass. He's just teaching the boy a lesson.
Fury mixed with her fear, and she inched her bare fingers over his hand, feeling her mark catch hold of his life.
Take it, a dark voice whispered in her head. Silence is laughter, is mockery.
Her eyes leapt to Killian, who was on his back in the mud, hands up to block the blows the giant was raining down on him. And he turned his head to look at her, his mouth moving silently.
Don't.
Then Baird's knuckles struck his forearm, and she heard the crack of breaking bone. Yet it was her that screamed, the dark half of her mark rising. But before she could take Agrippa's life, Killian jerked his knee up, catching Baird hard between the legs. The giant howled, rolling off him and clutching his crotch, his face purpling and tears rolling down his cheeks as Killian staggered to his feet.
You bastard!
Baird groaned.
You truly are a woman to be going after a man's jewels!
Killian spit blood into the mud and grinned, his teeth smeared crimson.
Like any good woman, I was merely checking to see if you had a pair. Given your size, my friend, I can't say that I'm impressed.
Oh, shit,
Agrippa said, as Baird's face turned an even darker shade of purple. And then the giant charged, hands reaching for Killian's throat. How he did it, Lydia couldn't have said. But in a blur of motion, Killian was on the giant's back, one arm around his throat and his legs pinioning Baird's to his sides. Grabbing his broken arm above the elbow, Killian squeezed, Baird's mouth wide as he tried and failed to draw in air. The giant launched himself backward, landing on Killian hard enough to make him cry out in pain from his fractured ribs. But he held on, ankles locked, holding tight, even when Baird got one arm free, his meaty fingers leaving claw marks on Killian's arms as he struggled. And then, finally, Baird went still. Killian held on for a few moments longer, then relaxed, releasing the giant's throat and rolling him off. Baird came to a few seconds later, shaking his big head and climbing to his hands and knees, glaring at Killian. Then he grinned.
"Not bad, you skinny little bastard."
"We have a victor,"
Agrippa shouted, and tugging Lydia to her feet, he pushed her toward Killian.
"And to the victor go the kisses."
Her heart in her chest, Lydia stumbled through the mud, falling to her knees in front of Killian. Leaning against her, he said softly,
"I'm going to see what I can learn from them."
Then he pushed her back with his unbroken arm.
"Go back to the room, woman. You've caused me enough trouble tonight."
Before she could answer, Baird reached down and caught Killian under the arms, lifting him to his feet.
"We need some drinks."
Leaving Lydia to gather up the discarded clothing, they moved back into the common room, the crowd cheering and hammering the men on their backs as they passed. Digging the key out of Killian's coat pocket, she tossed his clothing, boots, and weapons on the table, and ignoring Agrippa's laughter, she strode to the stairs, heading for their room. Not that she had any intention of remaining there.